I'm Billy Redner, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's good to be here, and it's great to be sober. And I didn't know how to start this talk. And I love country western music. And I was sharing this young lady right here a while ago about some of the things that when I first came in, how I felt when I walked in that door at Clarksdale AA, old group. Don was the youngest guy at the time. He really was. He had 15 years. And my sobriety date's November 1st, 1979. And I walked in, and I loved them, and they loved me. I don't even know why I felt that way, because I'd never felt love before. Never had, up to that moment. And I walked out, and there was a boy, Dr. Burnham's son, came in at the same time. And we walked out of that meeting that night, and I told him, I said, man, those people love me. That's what I felt. He said, hell, they don't love you. They don't know you. They don't care nothing about you. And the person that felt loved that first meeting stayed sober. And the person that didn't feel it has had trouble ever since. He's got moments of sobriety or dryness back and forth. And the country western song says this, and it's the truth. I loved you from hello. Y'all tore me up. And I've continued loving y'all. My story's much like everybody else's. And you know, it's like Brenda's. Except I didn't have babies, you know. It's like Linda's, some of the hardships she's gone through. And some of the joys that she's been able to have in her life. And then Bill last night, I mean, he touched me. It's almost like, I think I'm going to write a song. He touched me. Or has it already been written? You know? But Bill, you did. You touched me. And we have some things numerically in common. My mother committed suicide at 35, which I think started some of the process of what my psyche's all about. I had this thing in me that thought I was going to die at 35. And as I drew closer to 35, my drinking increased. And you brought that up last night for me to remember again, because there's a lot of things that get stored. And it isn't until I get into my closet and I start looking when you all opened it up, and I said, yeah, me too. And I did die at 35. I came in when I was 35 years old, couple of months short of 36. My birthday is the 21st of December, my naked birthday. And I died to self. Greatest thing that ever happened to me. When I walked in to AA, it wasn't about Billy anymore, you know. It was about what God could do for Billy. And that's the way y'all taught me, is things that God could do for me in my life if I was willing to listen. I was born and raised in South Texas, a little bitty town. Daddy calls it the armpit of Texas. Now, if you can draw a line from Corpus Christi, Texas, to Laredo, right smack in the middle, 70 miles from each, is where I was born. It's called Duval County. Now, the reason my daddy called it the armpit of Texas is that's where Pole 13 is, and that's the thing that got LBJ elected to the Senate the first time he ever ran. And they burnt the court. They were going to have a re-election. He had lost it, really. But they burnt the courthouse down, so they couldn't have a recount. And so he got elected. So Daddy didn't like LBJ at all. Sorry, Democrats, but my dad didn't like y'all. But the joke after that was this. There was three little Mexican boys walking down the street after the election, and they're crying. And this guy stopped and said, hey, Juan. Hey, Julio. Hey, Roger. Why are y'all crying? Oh, Senor. Our father's come yesterday. He no see us. I said, what are you talking about? I said, man, y'all's dad's been dead for 30 years. He says, I know, but he came and voted for LBJ, and he no come see me.
That's South Texas politics, and that's where I come from. Oh, Lord. My dad's German, my mother's Mexican. I'm a half-breed, and that wasn't very well accepted back then. I get on this side, and they talk about this side. I get on this side, and they talk about this side, and especially after my mother had killed herself. And then years later, they got together, and they said, you know what Billy said about y'all? You know, well, let me tell you what he said about y'all. You know, and I was all mixed up. I was messed up. I mean, really messed up from the beginning. No outlines anywhere. I didn't know how to stand ground and say, hey, man, I love these people. Don't talk about them. I love these people. Don't talk about it. Didn't know how to do that. Y'all taught me how to do that much years later. But I borrowed my wife's watch here because I know those seats are hard. You know, I ain't got much meat on my butt, so I know, man. That's tough. I don't know if it's got to do with age, but man, I never did feel those seats any longer. But I graduated from high school, and I already had problems with drinking. I never been locked up. I've never been arrested or anything like that. But once I started, I couldn't stop. And I got in a lot of little trouble. I graduated 123rd out of a class of 123. And I got my father to thank for that. And I was listening to Bill last night talking about IQ, you know, and that he had lost 18% or had 18%. And I thought, man, I never did have that much, you know. That was a genius to me. I don't know why. I store stuff different. But I had this feeling of being real inferior. And in school, they'd talk about, now you ain't going to believe it today because, you know, I've gained a few pounds, but I used to look like my arm, but I had the same size ears, got big ears. And they'd come up to me and say stuff like, Billy, the heaviest part of your body are your ears. And, oh, man, it killed me. It hurt me. And then they'd also say that I had the forehead of a mule, and that hurt too, you know. So I always felt bad. But I'll never forget the two Lone Star beers that became a magical thing to me. Back then, you used to graduate from the eighth to the ninth grade. And my grandmother would give me $20 for graduating. And I had two cousins, and they'd been drinking already. I hadn't drank yet. And they said, let's go buy some beer. I said, okay. So I took my $20 bill, and we had a place, a beer joint out of town, and we parked in the back, and they had a place for kids to buy beer. You couldn't go in the door, but you'd knock on this window in the back. It was a wooden window. Didn't have no window panes in it, just a wooden window. And I heard somebody, what do you want? Hollered at me, man. It terrified me. I want some beer. And he yelled back, what kind? I don't know. Just give me anything. And I stuck my money through that window, and he gave me a six-pack of Long Neck Lone Star beers and no change. I don't even think a six pack costs that much now. But man, you know, who are you going to argue with? So we sat there right in the back of the beer joint, and my two cousins, I mean, they popped theirs and they downed theirs fast. And I was sitting there and they kept on egging me on to drink. I said, man, I don't know. Finally, I took a sip and I thought, my God, somebody urinated in it, chilled it, and sold it to me. Nasty. But they kept on, and I finally downed the two Lone Star beers. And we were having a little dance at the gymnasium. And we went to the gymnasium, and the first thing I do, go to the bathroom. You know, if you're a beer drinker, you go to the bathroom quite frequently. Or if you get older, too. As you get older, you go to the bathroom a lot. I walked by this mirror, and I looked, and my God, I'd gained 10 pounds. And my ears had gotten smaller. I promise you. And my forehead had gotten smaller. And it was the first time in my life that I was acceptable to myself. It's funny, and yet it's sad, you know. And I went and used the bathroom and walked out and asked this girl to dance. I'd never danced before. And she said yes. And I thought, man, this is pretty good. It's what two Lone Star beers do. And actually, you know, it progressed to more. And I got drunk the night I graduated. We were drunk. Two cousins and I joined service together. We're going to go into buddy system. And we're going to stay together all the way through. You know, that's a lie. You know, that's what the military told you. But we thought it was truth. And we were drunk. And the same night I graduated, I walked out the auditorium. And, oh, I got to tell you, I looked at my diploma. And it had been signed. Because a lot of times they'd give you a diploma. If you didn't pass, they wouldn't sign it. But you got a diploma. I thought, I'm walking, I'm telling Daddy, it's signed, it's signed. And, you know, he's proud of me. I come from a real smart, really and truly, it sounds like, I come from a real smart family. My daddy was valedictorian of his class. My mother was valedictorian of her class. My brothers and sisters marked real high, or they were valedictorian and salutatorian of their classes. Not me, number 123 out of 123. But I was excited that he had signed it. The principal had signed the thing, or superintendent. Can't even remember who now. But I walked right out and got in a car of a recruiter. And the next morning, I'm being yelled at. And we're in San Antonio, Texas. I joined the Air Force. And I thought, oh, my God, what did I do? You know? And they're giving us. Now, I was sharing with somebody earlier that my stepmother one night stayed up many hours trying to teach me the multiplication table. And I had it. I really did. I mean, I knew what 2 times 2 was and 3 times 3. And, man, I was excited about it. And woke up at the breakfast table, and I knew nothing. Zip. So where I store things, I don't know, because I can tell you what 2 times 2 is today. So it's in there somewhere. But it takes me a while to get it out. And they're yelling at us, and we had to learn our serial number. Now, if y'all have been in the military here, in the past few years, it's the same thing as your Social Security number. But back then, we had a serial number. And mine's 1865-061-3. Still know it. And that was given to me in 1962, San Antonio, Texas, about 10:30 in the morning. And, man, I was hungover bad. And we had to learn it between San Antonio and a base which was called Lackland. There's where we went for training. And it took me forever. And so I was kind of proud that I remembered that number and still proud that I still remember it. Well, I joined the service, and it's pretty good living. It's like having a mother and father in the service, and sometimes a little bit better. They protected me more than my dad did, because if you messed up in town, they'd bring you in, not say much to you. But, man, if my dad ever got a hold of you, I mean, he'd whoop the heck out of you. And they didn't do that. They'd badmouth you a little bit, but not much. I'd never had more than one pair of shoes in my life, and they gave me 3. Wow, man. And I always wore hand-me-downs, and my brother is a lot taller than I am, and I'd have to cuff them up. I mean, 3 or 4 cuffs. And most of the time, my shoes had holes in them. And they gave me a suit, man, a navy blue suit. That's what the Air Force wears. And I thought, wow, man, this is great. Gave me a cap. Never had a cap before. I had an old straw hat I used to pick cotton with. And I looked kind of nice in that uniform. Really did. Well, I thought I did. And they gave me an allowance. And I cannot remember how much it was, but it's more money I'd ever had in my life. Put together in what time? And so I thought, man, I've got all this money to smoke and drink with. And they fed you 3 times a day. And later on, I found out that they really feed you 4 if you'd wake up at midnight. And when I found that out, I'd set my clock midnight, you know, much like what I do here now today. I don't miss a meal. Man, I'm going to make you every meal that y'all have. And I'd go there and eat at midnight. So I'd never lived so good, really, as far as materially. And then the next thing, the drinking started to even hit. And I was getting in trouble. Now, I never did get court-martialed. I never did get locked up in the service. They knew where to hit me. They gave me a mop and a broom and a buffer. Now, I'm a guy that feels real inferior, but he's got a tremendous ego. And this ego says, there's not a mop or a broom that fits my hand. That's for somebody else, you know. And you'd think I'd learn because I hated it. I really hated doing that. And I'd get off on a drunk, come in, you know, late to work every day. And they didn't like that. And I worked for a guy named C.T. Violet. He's from Texas. Big old guy. He loved me. Really did. He just loved me. But he loved to give me work, too. And he'd say, he said, at 4:30 this afternoon, all of us are going to be leaving, doing whatever we want. And you read, you're going to be sweeping, mopping, and buffing. And, man, I just hate it. And you think if I hated it so much that I'd stop my drinking, you know. But I couldn't put two and two together. Now, by that time, I knew what two times two was, but I couldn't put the two and two together on that kind of stuff. Some of the things that I did in blackouts, and I believe that only alcoholics have blackouts. That's just everything I say today is what I believe. It's, it may be different than what you believe, but it's what I believe. I was a guy that grew up in a real private house. I got caught walking a quadrangle naked. And when the MP touched me, I come to, and I saw my nakedness. And he asked me, he said, you know, what are you doing? I said, man, I don't know. And he said, do you think you can make it back to your barracks? And I said, yeah. That was one instant. That was in Amarillo, Texas. And then there was another instant in Clovis, New Mexico. I remember being in this beer joint. I like drinking in joints. Things exciting happen there. And not only that, Miss Wonderful is going to be there, you know. And if she wasn't that bar, I was a bar hopper, I'd go looking for her, you know. But I remember leaving the beer joint, and then the next thing I remember is this cop touching me on the shoulder. Now, the cops know when to let you come to. They let you stop urinating because they don't want you to turn, you know, and wet on them. I didn't know that, you know. I saw that in New Orleans in one of my drunks. It's long after that. But he let me finish, and then he touched me, and I come to. He said, what are you doing? I don't know. He said, well, you got out of the car. He was right behind me. He said, you got out of the car at this signal light, and it was red. He said, when you got out, and you started urinating. And I said, man, I don't know. And I've been one of those guys, either lucky or unlucky. Now, I say lucky because he let me go. He said, do you think you can make it back to the barracks? I said, yeah, man, I think I can. And he let me go. Unlucky, possibly, had he arrested me and locked me up, maybe I could have been slapped into reality then. I don't know. But they always let me go. And I dropped big names. After I got home, I dropped somebody's name. They always asked me, where have you been? And I drop a name, you know, and they let me go. I came back from Thailand. I was in a little fighter unit. They were fighter pilots that I did the paperwork for. I wasn't a pilot or anything. I was administrative. I made sure they went to school, got jump qualified and jungle qualified and all these things, and then graded them and all that stuff when I got all the paperwork in. And that's the kind of stuff I did in the service. My story was different when I got back, but that's the truth. That's all I did. And we came back from Thailand, and I'd bought a sword in Thailand, and they had a big squadron party for us. That thing was called Air Boon Shu. And at that time, that was 1963. At that time, Vietnam, there was just little things about Vietnam you'd hear every now and then, Vietnam. And what they did, this squadron of pilots did, they went to Vietnam, dropped a bunch of bombs, thought they were going to scare them. And the thing was called Air Boon Shu. That was our mission, or the code sign for that group of people that went to Thailand. And we were in Tok Lee, Thailand. That's where Frank and I were talking about. Frank's been there. And I bought a sword. And the next thing I know it is I'm drinking. And the next thing I know is somebody's got me pinned down on the floor just slapping me. I don't know if you've ever been slapped with an open hand, but it hurts. And man, it sticks. And it seemed like, and I'm coming to, and the more I'm coming to, the more it's hurting. And finally, my eyes, I guess, focused on him, and it's my roommate. And I said, man, what are you doing? And he was from Arkansas. He said, man, you just try to kill somebody with that sword that you brought back. I said, you're joking, because I wasn't that way. Really and truly, I'm not that way, unless I'm drinking. And he finally lets me up, and it scared me, but not bad enough to stop drinking, you know. I can't even tell you. He says, I chased somebody down this hallway trying to kill him with his sword. I remember the day that I got discharged from service. It was at Cannon Air Force Base, New Mexico. I was terrified. Here I was leaving my mother and father, again, which was a service. They had protected me very well, clothed me very well, fed me very well. In the back of my mind, I thought, what are you going to do now, boy? I was ill-equipped for the world, really was. I didn't learn anything in the service. I heard Bill, not Bill, I was trying to think, somebody was talking. Wayne, I think, was talking about he learned a trade in the service. And when he came out, he started working, selling electronics. I was ill-equipped for the world, and I knew it, you see. Now, outside, I was, man, we're going to party, aren't we? But inside, scared. And I drove out that base, and the first thing I did is hit a liquor store. Bought a bunch of beer and whiskey. And I was going to a little place called Wink, Texas. Because I'd heard my Uncle Guy had found Jesus. Now, I got to tell you about my Uncle Guy. He was my hero when I was a kid. And he was a roughneck. Now, if you're from Texas, you know what a roughneck is, but most of y'all are not. But a roughneck is somebody who works out in oil fields. And he was a derrick man. And that took a little courage to be way up there handling pipe, you know. And he put you on a harness and you manhandle pipe when they're drilling for oil. And he was built much like Earl, except as far as height, real stringy. The man had muscles on him. You could do like that, and his neck would just muscle up. And then he'd do this. And man, muscles just get hard as steel. And I said, wow. And then he'd turn around. The man just hold it there, man. And he was a handsome man, really was. Ladies loved him. And could dance. And man, he could fight and loved it. He loved to fight. He'd love for somebody to pick on him because he was fast. I mean, I've seen big men come up to him, and before they knew it, they were down. I mean, as soon as he had that little signal that they wanted to fight, I mean, bam, bam. I mean, just like that, lightning fast. Man, I want to be like him. And the truth inside of me, I'm just a little coward, you know. But I wanted to be like Uncle Guy. But I wanted to see this transformation. And so I got to Wink, Texas, which is in West Texas. The panhandle's like this, and then it veers off like that. And right here is Wink, Texas. On the other side is Oklahoma. And it didn't take me long to get there. I was feeling pretty good. And Uncle Guy wasn't home. Aunt Maggie was my brother, my father's sister. Real nice lady. So I got there, and she said, no, your Uncle Guy's not here yet, but he should be here shortly. Would you like to go have a beer in one of the beer joints? I said, well, yeah, pretty nice greeting. And she said, would you like to have a little company? Would you like to dance? And I said, yeah. She said, well, I got a girlfriend. She says it likes to dance and drink a little beer. And we just go to one of these joints. And sure enough, we got there and danced a little bit and drank a little bit. And the next thing, Uncle Guy appeared because there's only one joint there. And he knew where we were at. And man, y'all are going to hell, you know. Jesus don't like this kind of living, you know. And he says, come on, get in the car. Let's go. So got home, and I'll never forget. As soon as we got to his house, he said, Billy, he said, I'm going to be waking you up early in the morning, and you can head back to South Texas. He said, look, we don't do those kind of things here in my house. I felt that small. Here's Superman talking to me like that, you know. And I thought, man, I can hardly wait to leave. And I passed out. And next morning, Uncle Guy was waking me up, buddy. And he'd already gassed up my car. He didn't want me to spend any more time in a little place called Wink, Texas. And I headed south. And, man, I was drinking. Oh, and I had a 57 Chevrolet convertible. And I had that top down, man. And I was feeling good. But, you know, had a few drinks, then forgot about Uncle Guy. And feeling embarrassed and, you know, little. Had me a few beers and feeling pretty good. And, man, that sun was beaming down on me. And my top down. And I'm preparing myself for my daddy. Because my daddy's going to ask me a question. I know it. What are you going to do now, boy? You know? And I knew what the answer was that he'd like to hear. Going to college. You know? Oh, my son's going to college, you know? Well, ill-prepared for anything. I was passed all through school. Well, I finally got to South Texas. Burnt, man, that sun had burnt me up. It was one of those sunny, cloudy days. And, man, that sun will cook you with a cloudy day. And, I mean, I was red as a beet. And my daddy greeted me at the car, naturally, and asked me, and I told him, Billy's going to college. Come on in. I was telling Don, I think it was yesterday, they told me when I was being discharged that I could collect unemployment when I got out. And that's what I'd planned to do. So Daddy said, what are you going to do? I'm going to college. He said, well, yeah, but between now, I was discharged in May. And I was going to have to wait till fall. And I said, well, I'm going to lay around and collect unemployment. He said, not live in my house, you're not. My dad was a real proud man. We were real poor, but we didn't get food stamps. We didn't collect any kind of unemployment. And to this day, never in my life have I collected a single check. And, you know, I'm glad other people do, but I never have. And it was just one of those things that happened. And I think Daddy instilled something in me. I don't know. Because I'm a mixture of so many things, so many of y'all. I'm a mixture of a lot of things that I've heard y'all say and a lot of things that I've watched y'all do. And I even have taken some of your mannerisms in sitting and talking. Now, I wish that you could listen to me when I graduated from high school. I spoke English with a little broken accent, a little Spanish to it. You know, came from a real mixed community, German, Mexican, an English community. So I had a bad accent. And sometimes I call my house and my answering machine answers. I'm like, who is that? So I left the service and I picked up a little slant there. Then I moved from Texas to Arkansas and got a little Arkansas draw. Then I smoothed it off in Mississippi because they like to just kind of drag it a little bit. And then I'm here in Tennessee. And, man, I don't know what I am. I'm almost like a walking contradiction of myself, a chameleon. I want to fit in. I want to be loved. I guess that's the reason that I'm like a sponge. Every moment I'm taking stuff in. Well, got to college. Well, roughnecked. Nothing happened really. Drank all through it. My daddy would make sure I went to work. He'd wake me up, and I was badly, you know, I shouldn't have even gone to work. I was drunk at times, but I made it out there. And I lasted 2 weeks in college. And something miraculous happened. It was an English class, and this lady asked me to write something, and I couldn't write worth a darn. And she gave it back to me, and she put a bunch of red circle marks around it. And I didn't like that one bit, so I thought, shoot, I'll quit. So I walked out. And I got to my mailbox, and man, I had me one of them checks from the government that I was supposed to pay my tuition with. Shoot, man. I'm going to drink on this. And I sold my books for about one-third of what I'd paid for them. And I headed to one of my favorite water holes. It was called Club 44. Man, it sounds nice, that Club 44. It's on Highway 44, right there in Alice, Texas. Well, let me tell you what Club 44 looks like. It's a building much like this, but made out of wood, and it leaned to this side, and they had a railroad tie holding it up in a wooden floor. Now, those are the kind of clubs I like to drink in because I feel superior in those kind of clubs, you know. And, you know, I had some money, so I bought a round for the boys. and went into a blackout. And the next thing I find myself, I knew I couldn't go home. Even in a blackout, I knew I couldn't go home. I ended up at my uncle's ranch. Got a pretty good size spread. And it's wintertime now. And during the winter, they run fences. They mend fences. It's called running fences. If there's a strand of barbed wire that needs replacing, they replace it. Or if it's a post, you dig it up and put another post in it. It's hard labor. And finally, my eyes, I guess, focused on him, and it's my roommate. And I said, "Man, what are you doing?" And he was from Arkansas. He said, "Man, you just try to kill somebody with that sword that you brought back." I said, "You're joking, because I wasn't that way. Really and truly, I'm not that way, unless I'm drinking." And he finally lets me up, and it scared me, but not bad enough to stop drinking, you know. I can't even tell you. He says, "I chased somebody down this hallway trying to kill him with a sword." I remember the day that I got discharged from service. It was at Cannon Air Force Base, New Mexico. I was terrified. Here I was leaving my mother and father, again, which was a service. They had protected me very well, clothed me very well, fed me very well. In the back of my mind, I thought, "What are you going to do now, boy?" I was ill-equipped for the world, really was. I didn't learn anything in the service. I heard Bill, not Bill, I was trying to think, somebody was talking. Wayne, I think, was talking about he learned a trade in the service. And when he came out, he started working, selling electronics. I was ill-equipped for the world, and I knew it, you see. Now outside, I was, "Ha, ha, man, we're going to party, aren't we?" But inside, scared. And I drove out that base, and the first thing I did is hit a liquor store. Bought a bunch of beer and whiskey. And I was going to a little place called Wink, Texas. Because I'd heard my Uncle Guy had found Jesus. Now, I got to tell you about my Uncle Guy. He was my hero when I was a kid. And he was a roughneck. Now, if you're from Texas, you know what a roughneck is, but most of y'all are not. But a roughneck's somebody who works out in oil fields. And he was a derrick man, and that took a little courage to be way up there handling pipe, you know. And he put you on a harness, and you manhandle pipe when they're drilling for oil. And he was built much like Earl, except as far as height, real stringy. The man had muscles on him. You could do like that, and his neck would just muscle up, and then he'd do this. And man, muscles just get hard as steel. And I just, wow. And he'd turn around. And man, just hold it there, man. And he was a handsome man, really was. Ladies loved him. And could dance. And man, he could fight. And loved it. He loved to fight. He'd love for somebody to pick on him because he was fast. I mean, I've seen big men come up to him. And before they knew it, they were down. I mean, as soon as he had that little signal that they wanted to fight, I mean, bam, bam. I mean, just like that, lightning fast. God, man, I want to be like him. And the truth inside of me, I'm just a little coward, you know. But I wanted to be like Uncle Guy. But I wanted to see this transformation. And so I got to Wink, Texas, which is in West Texas. The panhandle's like this, and then it veers off like that. And right here is Wink, Texas. On the other side is Oklahoma. And didn't take me long to get there. I was feeling pretty good. And Uncle Guy wasn't home. Aunt Maggie was my brother, my father's sister. Real nice lady. So I got there and she said, "No, your Uncle Guy's not here yet, but he should be here shortly. Would you like to go have a beer in one of the beer joints?" I said, "Well, yeah, pretty nice greeting." And she said, "Would you like to have a little company? Would you like to dance?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, I got a girlfriend." She says, "It likes to dance and drink a little beer." And we just go to one of these joints. And sure enough, we got there and danced a little bit and drank a little bit. And the next thing, Uncle Guy appeared because there's only one joint there. And he knew where we were at. And man, y'all are going to hell. You know, Jesus don't like this kind of living, you know. And he says, "Come on, get in the car. Let's go." So got home, and I'll never forget, as soon as we got to his house, he said, Billy, he said, I'm going to be waking you up early in the morning, and you can head back to South Texas. He said, look, we don't do those kind of things here in my house. And I felt that small. And here's Superman talking to me like that, you know. And I thought, man, I can hardly wait to leave. And I passed out. And next morning, Uncle Guy was waking me up, buddy. And he'd already gassed up my car. He didn't want me to spend any more time in a little place called Wink, Texas. And I headed south. And, man, I was drinking. Oh, and I had a 57 Chevrolet convertible. And I had that top down, man. And I was feeling good. But, you know, had a few drinks, then forgot about Uncle Guy, and feeling embarrassed and, you know, little. Had me a few beers and feeling pretty good. And, man, that sun was beaming down on me. I had my top down. And I'm preparing myself for my daddy because my daddy's going to ask me a question. I know it. What are you going to do now, boy? You know, and I knew what the answer was that he'd like to hear. Going to college. You know, oh, my son's going to college, you know. Well, ill-prepared for anything. I was passed all through school. Well, I finally got to South Texas. Burnt, man, that sun had burnt me up. It was one of those sunny, cloudy days. And, man, that sun will cook you with a cloudy day. And, I mean, I was red as a beet. And my daddy greeted me at the car, naturally, and asked me, and I told him, Billy's going to college. Come on here. I was telling Don, I think it was yesterday, they told me when I was being discharged that I could collect unemployment when I got out. And that's what I'd planned to do. So Daddy said, what are you going to do? I'm going to college. He said, well, yeah, but between now, I was discharged in May. And I was going to have to wait till fall. And I said, well, I'm going to lay around and collect unemployment. He said, not live in my house, you're not. My dad was a real proud man. We were real poor. But we didn't get food stamps. We didn't collect any kind of unemployment. And to this day, never in my life have I collected a single check. And, I'm glad other people do, but I never have. And it was just one of those things that happened. And I think Daddy instilled something in me. I don't know. Because I'm a mixture of so many things, so many of y'all. I'm a mixture of a lot of things that I've heard y'all say and a lot of things that I've watched y'all do. And I even have taken some of your mannerisms in sitting and talking. Now, I wish that you could listen to me when I graduated from high school. I spoke English with a little broken accent, a little Spanish to it. You know, came from a real mixed community, German, Mexican, and English community. So I had a bad accent. And sometimes I call my house and my answering machine answers. I'm like, who is that? So, I left the service and I picked up a little slant there. Then I moved from Texas to Arkansas and got a little Arkansas draw. Then I smoothed it off in Mississippi because they like to just kind of drag it a little bit. And then I'm here in Tennessee. And, man, I don't know what I am. I'm almost like a walking contradiction of myself. A chameleon. I want to fit in. I want to be loved. I guess that's the reason that I'm like a sponge. Every moment I'm taking stuff in. Well, got to college. Well, roughnecked. Nothing happened really. Drank all through it. My daddy would make sure I went to work. He'd wake me up and I was badly, I shouldn't have even gone to work. I was drunk at times, but I made it out there. And I lasted 2 weeks in college. And something miraculous happened. It was an English class, and this lady asked me to write something. I couldn't write worth a darn. And she gave it back to me, and she put a bunch of red circle marks around it. And I didn't like that one bit, so I thought, shoot, I'll quit. So I walked out, and I got to my mailbox, and, man, I had me one of them checks from the government that I was supposed to pay my tuition with. Shoot, man. I'm going to drink on this. And I sold my books for about one-third of what I'd paid for them. And I headed to one of my favorite water holes. It was called Club 44. Man, it sounds nice, that Club 44. It's on Highway 44, right there in Alice, Texas. Well, let me tell you what Club 44 looks like. It's a building much like this, but made out of wood. and it leaned to this side, and they had a railroad tie holding it up in a wooden floor. Now, those are the kind of clubs I like to drink in, because I feel superior in those kind of clubs, you know. And, you know, I had some money, so I bought a round for the boys and went into a blackout. And the next thing I find myself, I knew I couldn't go home. Even in a blackout, I knew I couldn't go home. I ended up at my uncle's ranch. Got a pretty good size spread. And it's wintertime now. And during the winter, they run fences. They mend fences. It's called running fences. If there's a strand of barbed wire that needs replacing, they replace it. Or if it's a post, you dig it up and put another post in it. It's hard labor. And I told him that I'd been doing all that. And he asked me, how much you drinking? I said, man, I don't know, but quite a bit. I said, I really don't know. I said, I think I'm crazy. And he said, well, let's send you off to Whitfield, which is Tennessee's Bolivar, Mississippi is Whitfield. And so for 90 days for observation. So I said, okay, I'll agree to that. Well, he walks out to get some documents signed, and I'm thinking, what did I just do? You know, I'm feeling a little better now, you know, because I've told the truth about myself. I said, man, what happened to Dan Redner's little boy? And so when he got, and he had a book, a file on him, it was about that thick. And I opened up the cover, and on the very top of the thing, in the first page, it said, in full flight from reality. I wonder what that means, you know. I know now what it meant, but I didn't know then. And so when he came back, I said, Peter, let's talk about this a little further. Is there not an alternative? And he said, I don't know, Billy. He said, I don't know if you're crazy and you drink too much. If you do, or you drink too much, you do the most outlandish things. He said, I don't know. That's why I'm sending you to Whitfield. And I said, well, is there anybody else I can talk to? And he said, go down the hall and talk to Pat. And Pat is about the size of Earl. Well, everybody's the size of Earl. But he was real skinny and had a little straggly beard. And when I walked in, my first thought, here I am, you know, I'm hurt. But I thought, man, if I couldn't grow a beard better than that, I wouldn't grow a beard at all. And Pat talked real educated. You know, I'm Pat. And so he starts talking, just like we do. When we come up upon each other, we just start talking. And the more he talks, the madder I get. And I said, man, Carson done told Pat all about me. I said, man, that's embarrassing. And I said, man, who told you about me? I stopped him in mid-conversation. He said, I ain't talking about you. You're talking about me. And I said, hell, you crazy too? He said, no, I promise you, I'm an alcoholic. I thought, God, do you think that's what I am? And he said this. He said, hell, I don't know, but I'll take you to your first meeting. You can find out. Went to the Fairland House, my first meeting. And I wish I could have that set up at everybody's first meeting, because everything them gentlemen said in that Fairland House is the last resort. I mean, it ain't like Lakeside. It ain't no resort. It's a last part of where a drunk will end up at if he wants to try to get sober. And everything they said, I could agree to before I disagreed to everything. And the feelings that they spoke about, that's the way I felt. And the way they thought, that's the way. And, you know, we use that duck thing. You fly like a duck, quack like a duck, walk like a duck, you're a duck. I was a duck, buddy. That night, I was an alcoholic. And there was nothing wrong with it. They told me about the disease. I was like a sponge. Just, whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. I was absorbing all this stuff. Really was. I mean, wow. And I walked out knowing what I was and knowing that there was a solution. And Bob Ballou, he's dead now. Some of y'all might know him. But he was my sponsor then. And he got a book. And it said, Property of the Fairland House. And he got a black magic marker and marked through that and put to Billy from Bob, and he handed it to me. He said, I'll get honest tomorrow. Meant he'd pay for it later on. And I still got the property of the Fairland House. I still have it in my house. But things went pretty fast. Now let me tell you, today is the 18th. Did y'all know it's 18th of November? Did y'all know that? Do you know it's a Sunday? You know, in 1979, the 18th of December was a Sunday. It really was. But that Sunday, I woke up and it was cold, miserable. It was drizzling out there. And my ex-wife, Leo, had let me see my children, was going to let me see my children for 30 minutes. She talked to me like a dog over the phone. I'm coming over there. I want you to meet me at the curb. And I want you to take children in there. It's too cold to be outside. And in 30 minutes, I'm going to pick them up. Do you understand? I'm not coming into your apartment. I want them out there. And I said, yes, I'll do that. Well, they were dropped off, and I took them in, and they were poor little things were miserable because I was miserable. I couldn't control my emotions. I could see in front of me what I'd lost, and it was terrible. I mean, just crying all the time, and they were miserable too. I felt sorry for them, but I could not control my emotions. But I'm doing this, buddy. I'm doing this. I'm looking. And 30 minutes came up. Lil came up, took them out. They left. And they were looking at me like two little puppy dogs out the back window. Tore me up. And depression set in. Bill talked about depression last night. And it got worse and worse and worse and worse. And about 10 o'clock at night, I'm in the front of a mirror, knowing I'm fixing to drink. Couldn't stand it anymore. That mental anguish was too much for me. I couldn't take it. I had whiskey in the closet. I had drugs in the closet, and I was fixing to do something. I needed relief. And I looked in the mirror, and I was buttoning my pajamas, and I said this, November 18th, about 10 o'clock at night, Billy, you're no good. You've never been any good, and you never will be any good. And I turned to go get me something to drink, and there was a drawstring. I lived in an old garage. I mean, wasn't fit for a dog. To turn the light off, and something took me to my knees. I went down to my knees, and my eyes were closed, and the spirit came in. And man, just like waves of air, but today I call it spirit. I told people it was like feeling of air, like waves. And it got better and better. And in the pit of my stomach, I had a hatred for everybody I ever came into contact with. I found something to resent y'all for. You had too much. You had a beautiful sweater, and I didn't that Christmas. You had a little more jingle. Your parents were taller or whatever. But it seemed like there was these little knots being untied inside the pit of my stomach. And all of a sudden, there was an arm that was put around me, and I felt love like I'd never felt before. And it got better and better and better. And when you get home, what I'd like you to do is get a jar of honey and a spoon and start eating it. Man, that first spoonful is so sweet, so wonderful. But after a while, you can't stand anymore. And that's the way God's love is for us, or my experience at that night. And it got better and better and better. And I said these words. Now, I had said them many, many times before. I said, Lord, I know you are. Please take your arm off of me. I cannot stand this kind of love. And like the arm was removed, and the event or whatever happened, whether in a few seconds, a few minutes, I don't know, left. And from that moment, November 18th, 1979, to today, I've never craved a drink or a drug. Not only not craved, not even thought about a drink or a drug. I left Houston, Texas 4 years ago, July the 11th, my daughter died. The heart of my heart. I thought I wanted to die right then and there. How many juke joints I passed, how many bars, how many club 44s I passed, I couldn't tell you. Never did I think about a drink or a drug. And the pain was so intense. And me and God had a talk. I acknowledged God. I promise you, I was really acknowledging God. I won't even use the words here, how I acknowledged it. But I knew if I could get to Memphis, Tennessee, that I'd be okay. Because my friends were there in AA, and they could comfort me. And I got there, and Jackie's waiting on me. And the first thing I did, I had to mow the lawn. I don't know why, but I was mowing. Next thing I know it, here comes my neighbor, Jennifer. She come up to me, I was sweaty and dirty. She just hugged me. She said, I'm so sorry. And I said, I am too. Got to tell this story and I'm going to close with it. But I was in bed in a real depressed mood. I was naked, facing away from the door, in a fetal position, hurting. And I told Jackie, I said, I won't talk to nobody. I said, Doc, just tell him I'm sick. Next thing, somebody bolted through the door, named Frank. I'd sponsored him, big old guy. Jumped in bed with me and hugged me. And man, I'm crying, he's crying, and then I come to. I'm thinking, man, what if somebody walks in my room and sees Frank? They're going to think he's hungry. I said, Frank, get out of my bed. He said, I will if you'll come out of this room. And he brought me out of that room. And I've gotten better and better, and the hurt's gotten a little less, and I still miss her. And I am so grateful to y'all for letting me come here and share my story with you. Because my life has been good. In spite of all this other stuff, it's been good. Everything that I have, I want you to know that I owe to y'all. Hey, hey. I have a home, I have a car, I have a little jingle, I have some friends, all that stuff. If I had not come to AA, I'd never had. Because I can tell you, it was sparse before I got here. The day before I got here, it was real sparse. I was making it day by day. And y'all have made my life so abundant. I want to thank everybody that has anything to do with this retreat. It's been a great experience. Milton, thank you so much for asking me. Joanne, thank you so much for being a friend. Don, I love you, man. He's my sponsor now. He became my sponsor when my first sponsor died, Bob Ballou. And I love Dewey Bell. God, I wish I had another hour just to tell the stories about them too. I love calling them. They live in Calhoun City. Now, I can't get a hold of them. I get a hold of their daughter. Her name's Pam. And I said, Pam, what's going on? I got to tell you all this. I said, oh, Mom and Daddy are out there fighting. And I said, really, what are they fighting about this time? Well, Daddy keeps on hollering, where's my hunting jacket? And she said, it's in the shed, Don. I'm saying, where is my hunting jacket? It's in the shed, Don. Well, Don had put his hunting jacket on a chair. And Dewey Bell had taken it out of the chair and put it where it's supposed to be, in the shed. But he wanted it on the chair. And I told Pam, I said, go tell your mother to put that hunting jacket on that chair. The reason I'm here is this, because this is what y'all get. Y'all didn't tell me how good you were. You really didn't. It was this. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, our dark past will avert others from misery and death. It is our greatest treasure. Thanks.